on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
From 30,000 feet above, I see El Paso City there below. Left Alaman, your corner, come back a dosado, men star left now.
That's the voice of the man we're visiting with today on Hometown Heroes, 89-year-old square dance calling legend Ernie Kinney of Fresno, California. During World War II, he served as a flight operations officer with a squadron of Marine Corps fighter pilots, organizing their missions, staying in the office there and keeping track of their planes. We've heard a bit about there, and I get that you're not looking for praise here, Ernie, that you saw the Marines on the ground who secured that land, the pilots in the air, as those who were perhaps putting themselves in greater danger, but how do you really feel about the work that you did? You feel like it made a difference?
Yes, it made a difference. I enjoyed what I was doing. I had a good time, and all the people I worked with were commanding officer, and all the people were just wonderful people. We even had a basketball team while we were there. Played basketball right outside the place there. They had a court there. We had a good time, and we finally got to the point that we challenged other teams, and they'd come over and play us. Outside of high school, that's where I got my first good basketball experience in.
That was overseas, or that was in Mojave?
Overseas.
So there's a war going on. There's planes everywhere. There's tanks, and there's artillery, and you're playing basketball.
We're playing basketball, yeah.
Who was the most feared opponent you had to go up against? Was there someone who was kind of legendary in those parts?
Well, we had one team we couldn't beat. They were all the other color. Yeah. And they beat us every time we played them. But they were a lot taller, and we had a good time, though. We enjoyed it.
Well, that's real interesting. You know, as we're right in the middle of the NC2A basketball tournament, and they always bring up the integration of that game and Texas Western beating Kentucky and all that. At this time, World War II, the military was segregated, so they separated the different races. Was there animosity there, or did you guys just respect each other because of the game?
We respected each other because we were there. Yeah. These were all a different area, not a different area, but a different part of the island. And we respected those people because they beat us every time we played them.
Hard to miss out on that reality. I mentioned the casualties at Peleliu. And you know, for a small chunk of land to have more than 1,200 Marines killed and more than 5,000 wounded, did you see some of that? And you mentioned getting flight time. I'm sure that gave you a big picture on this whole thing.
We lost some. Accidentally, a Navy ship missed some of the hills and fired over and hit one of our group in a foxhole that was waiting down there, and our own guys. But that's what happened. It wasn't from the Japanese people. But, well, when we first got to the island, you could see they were tuned in on everything. They had, like, logs laying out on the beach. They were up in the tunnels on top of the hills, the three ranges. They had everything keyed in on those logs. And when the 1st Marine Division went in there, that's how they got so many of them. They were ready for them.
And I know it's not easy to talk about this kind of stuff, but I'm just trying to imagine myself in your shoes. And here you are, what, 19, 20 years old, and you're seeing this mass carnage. How did you deal with that? And was it intimidating? Was it scary? How did you process all of that?
I don't remember how I processed it, but I had a job to do, so I was doing it. And thank goodness, I tried to do as good a job as I could, and I wanted to win the war.
And you wouldn't stay on that island forever. You would move on to the Philippines. Did you have a different perspective, you think, after that engagement at Peleliu as you went on to the next area of battle?
Well, we were called there because the Air Force fighter planes, the P-38s at the Philippines, couldn't deal with the Japanese fighter planes. So that's why he called us, General MacArthur called us up there. Then the same thing at Okinawa, when they called us up there, the kamikazes were diving in on everything. And we had to take those out, our pilots. And they enjoyed it. The pilots enjoyed it. We didn't lose, but about, well, we lost one of our, a major in our squadron. He had a tent up there, and one of the kamikazes derided his tent. Of course, he wasn't in it, thank goodness. And so we didn't lose anybody up there.
And your squadron, it was all Corsairs throughout the war?
F-4Us. And then toward the end of it, we got F-4U-1Ds. And then the war wasn't over yet, but we were coming back, about seven of us, coming back to the United States to reform our squadron to go aboard carriers. The F-4Us were not, you know, weren't good on carriers, but the F-4U-1D was a really good carrier plane. And on the way back, the war was over.
That might have been good for you, that the war was over. Well, I'm just curious, with your exposure to them, I know you weren't flying them all the time, but you did go up in them, and you certainly knew all these pilots who were flying them. What did you come to appreciate about that aircraft and its capabilities and the impact that it had on that war in the Pacific?
I don't know. I like the shape of it. I like the wings like that. Yeah. That looked good. Anyway, we were coming back home, and seven of us, our sergeant major and chief pharmacist mate, and five more of us, to reform the squadron and go aboard a carrier, and we got to Eniwetok, and the ship pulled in and parked, and we caught hitchhiked a barge to go take us ashore, and we did. We got there, and they said, well, you can't come ashore. They're having a big beer party because the war's over. Everybody gets a couple of beers now, today. The chief pharmacist mate said, wait a minute, you got a phone? Yeah, right up there. So he goes up and gets the phone. Next thing you know, here comes an ambulance and picks us up. He takes us to sick bay and checks out an aspirin for each one of us. Now we're ashore. Sergeant Major said, let me take care of this. He went in this island, the executive officer, and said, told him what had happened. Said, we're on the way home to reform a squadron. What do you need? He said, well, we don't get any beer tokens. He said, how many you want? He said, about a dozen apiece. He said, okay.
And I want to get to that and what that all meant for you, but I'm sure there are some moments in your time in the Philippines at Leyte, and as well in the lengthy battle at Okinawa. You mentioned the kamikazes and that your squadron was active in preventing them from achieving their goal. I'm sure there's some moments that stand out from that time period, things that you saw or things that were powerful. What do you remember?
Things I saw didn't happen, but I could feel them. But I didn't see anything actually, because I was sitting in the office taking care of my job. I'd be told about it, and I was happy with what I was doing. I was doing my job the best that I could, and that's all I could do. But I was glad to get home and start over.
What would you say was the most difficult aspect of your job? Can you give us a sense of what some of those decisions or duties that you had to deal with were, and what made it difficult at times?
Well, I was trying to take care of what all of our pilots wanted, and they were all good airplane flyers. They were all, you know, single engine. I mean, it was one person. They didn't have a co-pilot. I'd question when they come in how things were going, and was everything all right with the engines and all that. And if there's anything wrong with it, I'd pass it on to the maintenance shack and tell them what the problem was. So that's all I did, was try to take care of the guys that were flying the airplanes, because they were the ones putting themselves in danger, protecting us, in other words.
How many pilots were you responsible for?
I think we had 26 pilots in our squadron. All of them were old people. They were up in their 20s.
Did you ever have a situation in all those battles where one of your pilots was shot down or killed or captured?
We had a couple shot down, but they weren't killed. They shot down, hit in the ocean, and we had to go out and take them out. I'd go to air sea rescue, and I'd go out and help those people get them out of the plane, and they're still floating around, you know. And we didn't lose any over there. No pilots. Thank God for that. Yeah.
Well, and you said that very matter-of-factly, but I can just see people's ears perking up as they listen to this. You talk about an air sea rescue, and that sounds pretty exciting and pretty wild. What kind of plane would you guys go up in to find them? How did you know where to find them, and how would you get them back aboard?
Well, we had the floaters, you know, the air sea rescue planes were floaters. Uh-huh. They'd go out and land where the plane was, and we'd get them in, just pick them up out of the cockpit of the plane if they were still in it. If they were in the water, we'd hope, thank God, they were still floating around. We just put them back in the plane and take them back to sick bay and turn them in. None of them were killed, thank God.
Well, and I would imagine, and I've talked to guys who were shot down and had to survive floating in the water for days at times, or were picked up by the enemy. That could have happened there easily. So I imagine they were pretty happy to see you when you picked them up. Do you remember any reactions that they gave you?
I don't know. I was worried about what I was doing. Yeah. I don't remember the reactions of any of them. They just glad we were there, and tell me put their arms around me, but I'd drag them in.
Well, that seems like a pretty rewarding thing to do and fulfilling thing, to be able to help basically save guys' lives in those situations. Did you ever feel in all your days in the Marine Corps like your life was ever in danger? Were there any close calls that got your attention?
Not as I can remember. I was out of the line of fire, as far as I know, as we were worried when we went in about snipers, but I didn't give it a thought until, unless I got hit, but I didn't get hit.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. And you mentioned your Corsairs intercepting kamikazes. How would they do that?
They were just flying in, getting ready to dive, and the Corsairs, of course, when they know they're coming, well, they get in the air and get them out of the air as quick as they could. And they, well, we had some good pilots, too. They were right on their tails right away.
Well, I'm sure the ships down there sure appreciated that, but I also imagine it wasn't possible to get every single one, so that had to be at times an uphill battle. Were there were more kamikazes than there were Corsairs to take them out?
Not at the time we got there, but I think they got scared away. This was late when we went up there. The last thing, we were up there about 2 weeks and then back down to Peleliu, and that was it.
And I mentioned the extreme casualties in some of those battles where you were in that area. Did you ever have to experience memorial services for some of your fellow Marines? Was there a way that you tried to honor their memories or took care of them that way?
I don't remember any of our group that ever was killed. Some were close, but at Peleliu, we didn't go ashore until the 1st Marine Division was pretty well in there. And then we followed them in, and then went to, after the airport was opened up, well, then we went in then and started. They hadn't brought our planes in yet, of course, but as soon as we got there and got the airport all fixed up, well, here they come.
Well, and just that, you know, I know Admiral Nimitz, of course, had his famous quote about the Marine Corps that uncommon valor was a common virtue, and you got to occupy these spots on these islands because of the work of those Marines who paid a heavy, heavy price. How do you feel about those Marines who are on the ground with their machine guns fighting the Japanese at close range?
I will honor those people, just like I did my uncle. And he was killed after the armistice was signed, but that, what did they know back then in 1918, what had been done? They didn't know. He was crossing the Meuse-Argonne River in Germany when he was killed. And I never got to meet him. I probably will someday, though.
Lord willing, and you did get his name, and I know that you've tried to live up to it. You mentioned finding out the war was over, and you had one whale of a party that night. Did it ever hit you what that end to the war might have spared you, how your life would have been different if the war had gone on?
No, I didn't give that a thought. I was glad it was over. I was coming home to my wife and a child. By the time I got back to San Francisco and then San Diego, I got my discharge and got the train home.
So you were already married before you went overseas?
I got married in Mojave.
So you're overseas knowing that you've got a wife and a child to survive for. Here, you know your uncle had been killed in a war. How often did you think about them, and did you ever hear from them while you were overseas?
No, not when I was overseas. But I tried. But when we got back to the States, of course, we talked on the phone. And she was still in Oklahoma, and I raced back there as soon as I got out of the Marine Corps.
I think I know the answer to this, but I got to ask it anyway because I think everyone's out there would wonder the same thing. All those days that you spent overseas serving in a war zone, did you ever wonder if maybe you wouldn't make it back and see her again?
Well, I thought about that, but I tried to keep it out of my mind as much as I could. Our daughter was born in Tehachapi while I was stationed at Mojave, and then we did better after that when I got home. We had a son and then another son.
Three for three. And I want to talk to you a little bit about what you did after the war. But when you look back on World War II and what the Marine Corps did specifically in the Pacific, what are you most proud of? What, because I know that saying, once a Marine, always a Marine. What gives you that sense of pride in what you and all those other people accomplished?
I was proud of the people that flew our airplanes. They did the job. All I did was tell them where to go. And they did their job. And I was proud of every pilot we had I liked. The CO was great. He worked with me and told me what to do. And I asked him what I could do that could help. And he was very nice to me. Good guy.
And how about those pilots? How did they treat you?
They treated me good. They were good. Even the one that hit the Joshua tree in Mojave. he was still good to me. And even the ones that tried to run in the engines of the trains, and I had to tell them to quit doing that.
I'm glad they listened to you. And I bring it up, you know, people famously, and here in the Valley, Pappy Boyington, of course, a longtime resident, one of the most legendary Corsair pilots ever, and inspired so much after the war about their exploits. So you didn't have any rebels in the group of your F-4U pilots?
As far as I know, no. I didn't know any.
Well, and I know you know a lot of people. We already heard about the Hollywood star Glenn Ford. You served with him early on in the Marines. But when we come back, I want to talk post-war and your adventures in music and sports. Here's a little of Ernie's square dance music to take us out. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
By the Rio Grande, men back out left Alaman, come back and then you promenade the Lena back home to old El Paso.
If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.